Hey, it's so good to be with you guys. I love Austin. It's just so granola. And I lived in Dallas for, I want to say like three, four years. And when we wanted to escape the business culture of Dallas, me and my wife, we would come down to Austin, find the grungiest coffee shop we could find. And I just love this city. It's just such a privilege to be here. And amazing worship. I love these guys. I love, you know, God is like, there's a verse in Proverbs that says, the Lord announced the word, and great is the company of those who proclaim it. And I love that there's a great company of people across the earth right now that are zeroing in on God's heart for Austin, Texas. Anybody think that's cool? And so I'm super pumped. I lead a movement called the Burn 24/7. My good buddy Greg is up here up front, who's been holding it down in the city. Give it up for Greg. He's been holding it down in the city, I think, for 8 years now. 8 years, they're celebrating their 8th anniversary of day and night worship. Every single month, they gather together and do, I don't know, anywhere from 4 to 400 hours. Not 400, but a lot of hours of nonstop worship and prayer, uniting the city together. And so it's just such a privilege to be here, and so many different movements. And, you know, I was flying on the way here, and I'm actually leaving to go back home tomorrow. This season for us right now is just cray. I mean, it's like I have 3 little kids, 5, 3, and 1, and usually I get around to about 30 different nations a year. Just to give you a little snapshot of my life, 2 weeks ago I was in a place called the Faroe Islands, which is in between Norway and Iceland, and I was eating whale blubber, for reals, worshiping with a crazy group of Faroese people, which I didn't even know existed until this year. Last week, I was in L.A. with 6,000 people at Heaven Come, the Bethel Music Gathering, and it is amazing. And I just love, like, and I could just all night here, like, I could just, like, I know it's raining today, and, like, you guys don't ever get rain, but, like, I could share all night long on the craziest, wildest testimonies you've ever heard of what God's doing around the earth. I was in northern Iraq with my family, 20 kilometers from ISIS about 3 weeks ago, no, 4 weeks ago. My little kids walking around refugee camps, loving in on refugees, watching Muslims by the hundreds and the thousands coming to Jesus. And so a big part of my heart right now, and I'm going to share a little bit of my story, and tonight, I just want to pump you guys full of faith. I just want you to get happy. Like, can we just get happy? Can we have a license to be happy right now? I know it's election season. I know it's crazy. I know people are fighting, and Christians especially get on Facebook and, you know. I don't know why. It's funny. These Christians vent their deal on Facebook to, like, people they've never met ever, you know. But, you know, we just get crazy, and I feel like this is a season where the enemy, he wants us to get wrapped up in what we see on the media, what's happening around the world. He wants us to be provoked by fear and intimidation and discouragement. But man, I got a whole nother report card of what God's doing around the world. And I'm telling you, if he can do it, you know, and 20,000 a day can get saved in India, then I think there's hope for UT Austin. Like, I think there's a lot of hope. You guys got a lot of amazing people here. There's a lot of good stuff God's doing in Texas. And my wife actually has her degree from UT Dallas, so I don't know if there's a connection there. Got some inheritance here. But anyway, so I wanted to share, first of all, I was flying in today, and there's apocalyptic clouds, you know. And all the people, it's funny, like all the people in the airport in Austin, because everyone's flights are messed up, you know, they're just looking out the window. Is this the end of the world, you know? It did kind of look like freaky, like Twister or something, you know. But I just feel like as much as I love Texas, like so much, I like would move back here tomorrow if God would let us. There's also this weird kind of like, the world's ending, let's get in our bunkers with our guns and water kind of thing, you know? There's like this kind of weird retreat mentality, or this us against the world mentality, or this kind of like deal. And I just want to tell you that we probably shouldn't think like that. And, You know, we're not waiting for God to come with the ambulance from heaven and rescue us out of this hellhole called the earth. We're actually the people that come and bring heaven to the earth. There's hope for this city because you live here. I mean, even in the Old Testament, you look, it says, God, will you not spare the most wicked city on the entire earth if there's just a few righteous? If there's just a few righteous, you know? I mean, how many people love Jesus in Austin, Texas? How many people on the campuses of America? I was just with a bunch of my friends. They did a 200 campus university tour and called Carry the Love, and we were joined together with them, and we were in Oklahoma, and we were flying a drone illegally, I think, now that I think about it. We were just flying a drone, like, all over the city and doing the most ridiculous, like, videos, trying to make them look really cool, you know, and worshiping on top of parking car garages and stuff, and just proclaiming stuff over this city, you know, over OU and over OSU and over these campuses. But the craziest thing is that we're praying that God would do something, and then later that night we gather together and there's 600 rabid, fiery college kids that can't shut up during worship. They just want to keep going. Three fast songs and three slow songs is just not enough for them. And we're living in the day, guys, where God's literally answering our prayers. I live right now in Pennsylvania, in the Northeast, if you're geographically challenged. I live within a few hours' drive from every single Ivy League university campus. And part of the reason why we really felt like God actually turned to Psalm 67 while I'm sharing this. Part of the reason why I actually feel the Lord called us to the Northeast, and we've been doing stuff across the Middle East. We've been doing stuff. I mean, I grew up as a 12-year-old, you know, more than a worship leader or a speaker or an author. Like, my number one jam is, like, I'm a missionary. Like, this is just who I am, you know. And I think there's a quote, I think it's by John Wesley or maybe Hudson Taylor. It said, if God calls you to be a missionary, don't stoop to become a king. And one of the things I'm super pumped about is God's raising urban, indie, hipster missionaries, sending them into the campuses and universities of America. And the harvest of souls that's coming is crazy. So the Lord sent us to the Northeast. We're like, God, why did you banish us here? You know, you sent us from Texas where there's no income tax and everybody's happy all the time and, you know, and the weather's great and now we're in the cold Northeast, you know, and the church graveyard. And we just got these words from the Lord, like, redig those wells, like, search out the wells of revival. And if you look at Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Brown University, all of these campuses, they were literally the foundation or they were ground zero for the Great Awakenings. Guys with me, you know this, right? Harvard, Princeton, Yale were actually ministry schools. They were places that housed and raised up revivalists that changed the earth. And if you walk any of those campuses, you'll see verses and prophetic words literally inscribed in the stone of the campuses. In fact, check this out. Yale University, and I'm on a university jam right now because this is where we are, right? Yale University is literally set up exactly like the temple in the Old Testament. There's an outer court, there's an inner court. There's a Holy of Holies, which is the building where George Whitefield and John Wesley and all those crazy guys used to come in and blow it up with meetings of revival and worship and fire. And people would, literally students would be so overcome with the presence of God that they would, like, lay on the ground all night long until every ounce of sin came out of them and then they would be raised up. I mean, the stories are nuts, right? And so you have this history and heritage. So anyway, let me read this verse before I get going. So Psalm 67, this is a verse I just wanted to speak over you guys because I think you're kind of a big deal. And I want you to think that you're a big deal. Actually, tell someone next to you, say, I'm a big deal. Kinda. And what I mean by that is this. My prayer, you know, flying 3,000 miles here and then 3,000 miles back home tomorrow and flying through apocalyptic storms is that maybe three people in this room would actually get this message. I'm preaching to like three right now. I don't know which three, but I'm not actually preaching to Ollie. I'm preaching to three because I believe, and I was praying, and I've been praying this lately, God, who is it that you're sending me to? Taking time away from my family, you know, we're all crazy busy, we have massive stuff going on, but God, there's somebody in Austin that's literally actually going to believe it. They're going to buy in 100%, and they're going to set their face towards your promises and not give up. And I felt like there were three, so announce yourself. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, Psalm 67, verse 1, it says, may God be gracious to us and bless us. By the way, I love verses that talk about global domination of prayer and worship. You know why? Because that's where we're going. Matthew 6, Jesus said, you want to know how to pray? Pray like this. Actually, the disciples said, teach us how to pray. They never said, bring us to a conference or bring us to a prophetic meeting or take us to a cool workshop. No, they said, Jesus, all we want to know is we just want to know how to pray. Teach us how to pray. And if you research the foundations of the university revivals, they all start with weak, pathetic little prayer meetings with four people in a field next to a haystack. That's how they all start. That's how they all start. In fact, every single great revival in history that's happened in the last few hundred years has started by college students. Just throwing it out there. Psalm 67 says, may God be gracious to us and bless us and make his face shine upon us so that your ways may be known on the earth, your salvation among all nations. May the peoples praise you, God, may all the people, say all. May the nations be glad and sing for joy. Praise the Lamb. This is a joyful worship prayer meeting. Sometimes I go to like worship and prayer sets and I'm like, God, just put them out of their misery. They look so bummed out up there. Like, raise up a worship and prayer movement that's fun and joyful and is attractive, meaning that we actually love to be in his presence. And we love to pray and we love to worship because it's fun. Okay. May the nations be glad and sing for joy, for you rule the peoples with equity and guide the nations of the earth. May the peoples praise you, God. May all the peoples praise you. How many students is there here? 100,000? Close. 50,000. 50,000. Every student. May all the peoples. What's the will of God for this campus? Everyone. 100%. Not a Christian minority, not a small little group that just trying to make it by with just a couple people. No. The will of God is that none would perish. The will of God is that everyone would praise him. The will of God is that no one is beyond reach of the gospel of Jesus Christ. May all the peoples praise you. Check this out. Then the land will yield its harvest. May God bless us still so that the ends of the earth will fear him. Okay, so it begins with the psalmist saying, God, be gracious and bless us. Make your face shine upon us so that they can see you. Now, this is where revival, this is where even the worship and prayer movement, where it becomes, it has to be embodied by somebody. Like, somebody has to carry it. Like, it's not like, we're dreaming up that one day, hopefully, these words will happen and we come to our meetings and maybe if God feels like he's in the right mood, maybe he can send a little angel that can sprinkle some dust over a campus and something cool will happen. That would be actually way too easy. It says, no, God, we want you to shine in and through us so that they can see you through us. Christ in us, the hope of glory. In other words, and 1 John says something even crazier. Says, in this world, you are like God. Turn to someone and say, you're like God. You're like, I am, really? In this world, you are like God. May God be gracious. May he bless us. May he shine on us. May the world recognize us. See, I'm so tired of Christians in America trying to be relevant. Give me a break. The world doesn't want your relevance. You're not supposed to look like them. You're not supposed to talk like them. You're not supposed to water down the gospel to where you don't even know what it means. You're supposed to be outrageously crazy in love with Jesus so that people notice you. You're supposed to be weird. Some of you need to embrace your weirdness. Like, you're just weird, okay? Like, lately, some of these meetings I've been going to, especially with the eating whale blubber with the guys in Faroe Islands, I'm like, you guys are strange. Like, this is just an odd group, you know? But yet they're getting people all over their little island saved. And they know they're weird, and they're pumped about it. And I feel like probably one of the things that's crippling this college movement is we're just trying so hard to fit in. And I just feel like God's saying tonight there's permission to not try to fit in. Especially in this city. I mean, the motto of this city is keep Austin weird. I mean, gosh, if that's not permission enough to be outrageously on fire and crazy for Jesus, I don't know what is. So anyway, we moved up to the Northeast, and I had no desire or heart to move there because we lived in Texas. Who wants to leave, you know? And when we got there, the Lord gave us these words about, I'll never forget, I was walking the campuses because we took a couple trips just up to the Ivy League schools, Harvard and Boston and Yale and Connecticut and Brown and Penn, UPenn and Pennsylvania. And the Lord just said, just walk the campus, just dream with me, just walk the campus. And so we would walk the campuses, and, you know, these are now known as probably the biggest promoters of humanism, and you know, man can do it by himself ways of thinking. I mean, the nations send the kings of the earth to these campuses and universities to get trained up in humanistic ideologies. I mean, think about it. Just a little while ago, they were the epicenter of revival. And so I'm walking along the campus, and I'm in Yale. I'll never forget, I was like, God, I don't feel you here. This place, nobody cares about you. I'm like, let's just forget Yale. Yale had its day, but it's a long way from there. And I remember the Lord gave me this verse in Isaiah 54. It says, sing, O barren woman, you who have not born, for greater are the children of the desolate than her who had children. And then it says, burst into joy, break forth in shouting. Basically, move into the place where you're worshiping and you're singing over your coming breakthrough. In other words, this is where we come up with the theology, sing it until you see it, right? Sing it. Sometimes you have to sing it until you see it. Are you with me? How many of you guys know in worship, you go to levels in the spirit. You go to places in God where you can access things that are not actually manifested on the earth yet. Are you guys with me? Jehoshaphat, Gideon, Paul and Silas when they're in prison. I could come up with 80 examples from the Bible of people that worshiped in a current situation where their reality did not match up with what they believed and what they sung, but they kept worshiping and they kept singing and they kept believing until that reality became this reality. Going back to, you know, Matthew 6, Jesus said, you want to know how to pray? This is what your ultimate prayer should be. That this place would look like that place. The kingdom come, my will be done on earth as it is in heaven. In other words, his will is that this campus would look like heaven. Are we all in agreement around that? Is that God's will? Amen. Come on. Yale graduate. That's awesome. Wow. So, getting back to the Yale story, it's so crazy. I was walking the campus of Yale, and I was walking past the theology department, and I was just depressed. I'm like, there's verses and prophetic words. I mean, this stinking campus is laid out like the temple. Like, give me a break. How many more signs do you need, you know? And I'm just like, God, you moved me up here to this godforsaken Northeast New England territory. And what am I doing? And it was rainy that day. Or it was like snowing or something. It was in April, of course, you know. And I was just bummed, you know. And the Lord gave me that verse, single barren woman. And he said, cross the street, you know. And I love the organic relationship with God, you know. It's like, we can just talk to him like he's our friend. We can share with him our heart. We can, you know, David gave us permission. You know, 70% of the Psalms is David whining to God. You know, and the Lord said, this is one that knows my heart. In other words, he has unlimited access because he shares with me who he is. And so, you know, I'm just kind of whining to God, you know, and I'm just saying, God, this is horrible. Like, this is hopeless. And I crossed over the road from the theology department into the cemetery. Where else would you want to go if you're depressed, right? So I went into the cemetery, actually, because I wanted to see, like, what great revival is throughout history. We're buried there, and there is a few. And as I crossed over the street, I was walking into the Yale Cemetery, and up above this massive stone archway, you can Google this if you want to fact check me, over the archway into the cemetery of Yale University, it says, "The dead shall be raised." And I remember I stood there and I'm just like, I did a double take, a triple take. I'm like, what? The dead shall be raised, carved into the archway of stone over the Yale University cemetery, that hundreds and thousands of students walk by that every single day. And it's just a prophetic promise that's etched into the ground of that place, right? And so I said, all right, God, we're going to go after this. I'm going to go back to Pennsylvania and I'm going to find anybody and everybody that's outrageously ridiculous enough to believe that a new move can happen on the Ivy League campuses of America. So we started contacting, and I don't know how many are familiar with our Burn 24/7 crew around the world. We're just some of the most outrageous and random people ever. We're just a ragtag team of presence junkies that just want to worship and pray and believe for crazy things, And we love getting together and dreaming. And I would encourage you, you know, you have to build a community and a life around people that dream ridiculous dreams. Like people that you can look at with crazy eyes one night late and be like, what if God did this? And you need somebody that can go, yeah, let's do it, you know? And it's like all things start like that, right? With those wily, like, too much coffee, like, kind of eyes where you're maybe even twitching a little bit, you know? You don't know if you're, like Paul said, you don't know if you're in the body or out of the body, but you're energetic and you're excited. And this is actually what hit me when I was in college in Tulsa years ago, which started this whole thing. We just couldn't shut up, you know? We were there at 2 in the morning just looking at each other. What if we never stopped? Ah, you know? And it's just like, yeah, you know, let's get more people, let's do it, you know. And it's just like, sometimes we just get too crafty and we get too like, we don't want to try things because we're worried they might fail, we may be humiliated. Well, join the crew, you know. So anyway, yeah, so I got back and I found a couple people and I said, this is what we need to do. We need to find a bunch of school buses. And we knew a friend that ran the largest Christian camp on the East Coast. And they just so happened to have like 50 school buses that they only used for a camp one time a year. And the rest of the time, they were just parked in this church parking lot. And the funny thing about these buses is they were painted Smurf baby blue. And they all had governors on them because of the laws, and they could only go 45 miles an hour. Right, because they just travel between the church and the campground, and it's all kind of in neighborhoods, right? Well, I approached the camp leader, and I said, hey, listen, what do you think about us taking some of these here Smurf baby blue buses, and what if we went up I-95 from Washington, D.C. to Maine, and what if we packed them with the craziest worshipers that we could find, people that were so outrageous enough to do flash mob worship in the middle of Harvard and Princeton and Yale, people that just believed that God was big enough to show up, you know. So we kind of sent a thing out. We didn't know who was going to show up or who would come, and hundreds of people responded. And we didn't have like a budget. We didn't have a bus driver. We finally realized, oh crap, we need somebody that has like the license to drive the bus. So we found a couple of those guys, and you know, and then we piled in these baby blue buses and drove 45 miles an hour up I-95, which people go 80 on that highway, by the way. And every single university campus along the way we stopped at. Some of them it was a day, some of them was 2 days. And when we were getting ready for this, we needed like a name. We needed a brand, you know, and we've never been good at that. Like, let's brand it and make it so epic and cool and no one can forget it. It's just etched in their memory, you know. And we couldn't think of any name. And I just said, you know, let's just call it God's Not Dead. Yeah, let's call it the God Is Not Dead Tour. Let's do that, the God Is Not Dead Tour. And we're like, yeah, God Is Not Dead Tour. Smurf baby blue buses. Let's do it, you know. So we piled everyone in these buses. The day before we're about to leave, I get a call from this MTV producer. Dead serious. This producer is producing, like, at that time, this was years and years ago, like the hottest shows on MTV. And she goes, hey, I think we want to do a story about your little tour thing. I said, how did you even hear about this? Like no one knows about this. Like, it's just on, like, we created some rinky-dink Facebook page. Like, it's, like, no one even knows. There's no even way to find information. It's like, oh, we know what's happening. We know what's going on campuses. And we've seen that you're doing this tour here, and we want to know what are you doing? And I said, well, we're just, I don't know. Good question. We're going to pile a bunch of worshipers who love Jesus into buses, and we're going to stop on every campus. And she's like, well, do you have permits for it? I'm like, nope. Do you know where you're going to meet? Do you have contacts on the universities? Nope, nope, nope. She's like, what is your purpose? And I said, we're going to sing over the barrenness and watch it come to life. So every place we stopped along the way, and it was funny too, like rolling into like New York City, Boston, these like tiny little streets with our entourage of baby blue buses. I mean, man, that was a sight to behold. And once the doors would open, it was just like indie kids exploding out with guitars and ukuleles and, like, you know, man buns and everything, you know, exploding out into the campuses. And we literally, we would just set up groups of worshipers around the most heavily congregated areas, you know. I have a real estate degree, license, and did real estate for a while, and it was always location, 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 right? So we thought, let's go to the place where the students are. Let's not wait for them to come to us, which is a lot of times predominantly a mentality with Christians on campuses, but we said, we're going to go to them, right? So we set a group of worshipers with their guitars singing outside of the doors of the cafeteria. That was one place we started, because all the college kids are going to know how to grub, you know? So we set them up, and we set them up in such a way to where there was a line of worshipers here and a line of worshipers here, and they couldn't get through the door without walking through our worship tunnel. And it was funny, man. Like, these are not, like, refined musicians. These are not, like, these are just, like, bleeding hearts, like, three chords of just, I love Jesus, and I kind of can sing, but kind of can't, but it doesn't matter. And we would worship, and it was amazing, especially on these super liberal, super, you know, super intellectual, super atheistic cultures, how when we would create a place for the presence of God in those campuses, in the ministry would just happen. Like, I remember one time, specifically in Harvard, and we actually got kicked off, I think, two or three times. And then, interesting, tell that story in one sec. But as people were coming in to the cafeteria, like, there would literally, there was such an amazing presence of God and ministry praying over kids that there would be a lineup of 20, 30 kids waiting to receive prayer and prophetic words. I mean, like, there would be people, oh, some guy would get healed with a knee brace on, and they would go, there's healing here, it's some kind of mystical healing thing. And all of a sudden, there would be a line of people wanting to get healed and prayed for. And it was so outrageously in your face.
Like it was just, this is who we are. And what ended up happening on Harvard specifically, this is such a great story. Man, I got stories for days. One of the guys in the group was a high school dropout. And he was a high school dropout that had a dream of his entire life of teaching at Harvard one day. Go figure, right? So when he was in high school, he got into a lot of trouble and da-da-da-da-da, ended up dropping out. I think he ended up getting his GED or something. But he never let go of this dream to, like, Harvard was always in his heart, you know, that he would be an influencer in that, you know, campus and stuff. And so he was so geeked out, and he actually only wanted to come on the trip just for that one stop. So when he's at Harvard, he was one of the guys kind of swirling around, praying over people, and just like, I mean, he was like, it's one of those guys, like, if you look injured in any capacity, like, if you're hobbling a little bit, or you're looking like you're struggling breathing or anything, this guy is there in 2 seconds, you know, just praying over you, believing for the power of God, and people get healed. Well, one of the people that got healed was a major theological professor. She went to him and she said, I've never felt this warmth that you have. She said, we're actually studying mystical spirits right now. Will you come to my theology class and do that, what you did here to my whole class? This is a true story. Are you guys with me? So the high school dropout that barely got his GED the next day was invited by the Harvard theological professor to come to her mystical experiential class and pray for people to get healed. Isn't that nuts? So he goes in there and he gets up and he goes, well, I had a dream and I knew I was going to be here one day, you know. And we're all just like, are you kidding me? And he just starts giving these words of knowledge, like somebody has this and somebody has this and somebody has this. And the professor gets up there and, isn't this mystical thing amazing, guys? Have you seen anything like this? You know, and then at the end of it, he goes, guys, this is just Jesus. And they all go, wow. He was invited to come back. He was invited to come back every single month to meet and educate that professor on the mystical ways of Jesus. Isn't that crazy? And it all started with just this wild-eyed idea, you know. And that was just one of the amazing testimonies that we had from that trip. But my point is that the Psalm 67 reality is, do we really believe that Christ in us, Christ through us, Christ shining upon us, do we really believe and have faith enough that the kingdom of God, it's not this intangible thing that we'll never grasp. And one day if we say the right prayer and if we grimace enough while we're praying, it might happen. But what if it is just you coming fully alive? And who God's called you to be? I want you to turn. I'm going to read one more verse over you guys. Luke 11. I want to end with this. I had a lot of other stuff I was going to say, but one of the biggest things about college students. How many of y'all are in here college students? Okay. One of the biggest things I see, biggest struggles is, man, what am I going to do with my life, bro? What do I study? What's my major going to be in, bro? Pray for me. Do you have a word for me, man? You know, and like we feel all of this pressure. It's like my wife, she has a double major degree, something, 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 hasn't used it once, but she really felt like she was supposed to get that. Maybe one day she will use it. Maybe one day she won't. Who knows? But we feel this pressure, and especially in American society, you know, it's like, make something of yourself for crying out loud. Climb the ladder. Get good grades. Get your degree. Get your 401k. Get your white picket fence. Get your American dream. Get your rat race. And we're focusing so much pressure on ourselves, on which path and what is his will and where do I go and what do I study. And I just got to be honest with you. I don't think God gives a rip what you study. I don't think he cares if you're pouring a latte at some hipster coffee shop down the street or if you're running a multi-million dollar company. I don't think he cares that much. He cares more about what's happening in you than what's happening. He cares more about who you're becoming than what you're doing. Because what you're doing is going to change a lot. You with me? Like, this is America. In 2016, people change jobs like every 5 years. All of you in here are going to be doing a lot of random things in your life. Who gives a rip what you do? It's more about who are you becoming. Why does he have you here? And who is it that you're made to become? Because who you're becoming, that's what's going to sustain and shape and create. And, you know, this is kind of a shameless plug. We have so many schools all around the world right now that we've raised up and training deals and, you know, leadership programs and blah, 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 blah. And one of the things that I could not find curriculum on is simple things like how to live a life of integrity. I was like, hey, millennials could really use this. Like show up on time, like pay your bills, like be a man of your word. I know that might be a little archaic and old school, but it's actually important to God. Like, I mean, it's great to like go after him and worship and be crazy, but he actually cares about those things, you know? And so I begin to gather moms and dads, just moms and dads that are real dear to me that I knew walked in this lifestyle of integrity, you know? And I said, I want you to like come up with the most nitty-gritty, like share with us your struggle and your resolve to maintain a life of integrity. And I collaborated and put this book together, like Bill Johnson, Heidi Baker, Dick Eastman, Alan Hood, Cindy Jacobs, Lauren Cunningham from YWAM. Tons of guys are on here. This was just featured in Relevant Magazine. Can't even believe they featured it this last month. But the whole thing about character and foundation and like knowing who you are and becoming a person of your word and all that stuff like is so dear to God. David actually said, in my integrity, you uphold me and set me in your presence forever. So it's actually his integrity and his character that sustained him to the place where God put him. You know, it's what sustained the anointing that was on his life. See, all of you guys in here are like crazy anointed. It's one of the things I realized about this generation. I got my own theory about that. I believe that this is the most crazy, anointed generation that's ever existed on the face of the earth because there's so much that needs to be done. And I believe that we're living out multiple destinies. I believe that 55 million unborn babies that were murdered in our nation, dreams of God. I believe that we're carrying destinies of those ones. I know it's crazy, but I believe it. I believe that we're carrying multiple destinies, and that's why so many of us, our personalities are like, whoa, you know, it's like, are you three people or are you one person? Like, as a joke. Anyway, guess he didn't think it was funny. But I do believe that we are the most anointed generation that's ever existed. Some of these guys, I mean, they're just getting saved out of lifestyles of homosexuality, and they're going up to people and interpreting their dreams and giving the most crazy words of their life. I mean, we're operating in a measure of gifting that's unprecedented on the earth. I mean, we have a team right now in northern Iraq. They are kicking butt. I mean, ISIS dudes are getting saved. Crazy Muslims are getting saved. Kurds, Yazidis, Arabs are getting saved. They're fearless. They're fearless. It's like Paul said, they just, you know, to live is Christ, to die is gain. You know, I mean, they don't even have like a college degree. It's just a group of people that are so outrageous to believe that the promises of God over that region are unshakable. And in the midst of a war, when everyone's fleeing, they're there. You know, and they're thriving. And I believe that this is a trend in the campuses, in the universities, in the war zones. We got a crew right now. I don't know if you guys have heard the David's Tent crew down in D.C. They've been worshiping and praying next to the White House day and night since September 11th, 2015. through the rain, through the hail. They've had to move locations 50 times. Secret Service people come through all the time. They have to change locations, but they're still worshiping. They haven't stopped. In this election year, they're saying, God, you are the one that's going to get the glory. The government's on your shoulders, you know. And those kind of initiatives are being birthed all over the earth. But I want to read this in Luke 11, and then I want to pray over you. And, you know, part of my heart to travel all this way for a night is I just want to provoke some of you to, like, move out of passivity. Stop living below the standard of what God's called you to. Stop living in tolerance and fear and compromise. Some of you are so held up in your own compromises. Move beyond that crap. Press into the will of God over your life. There's dreams he has for you. Smurf baby blue buses could be in your future. Serious. Anything's possible. Okay, Luke 11. So the disciples come to Jesus, teach us how to pray. Then Jesus tells them how to pray, and then he illustrates it in a story. Verse 5, he says, Jesus said to them, suppose one of you has a friend, and you go to him at midnight and say, friend, lend me 3 loaves of bread. A friend of mine on a journey has come to me, and I have no food to offer him. And suppose the one inside answers, don't bother me. The door is already locked, and my children and I are in bed. I cannot get up and give you anything. I tell you, even though he will not get up and give you the bread because of friendship, yet because of your shameless audacity, he will surely get up and give you as much as you need. So I say to you, ask and it will be given. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be open. For everyone who asks receives. The one who seeks finds. And the one who knocks, the door will be open. I feel like promises of God over America right now, that the most wild people, unsuspecting people, are saying, I'll take that one. Let's do this. Let's rock and roll. I'll take that campus. Yeah, God, 50,000 in Texas. Let's do this. Ohio State University, 40,000. Let's go for it. USC in LA, done. I feel like that there are these gold mines of opportunity, and God's just looking for shameless audacity. People that aren't safe. The gospel is not safe. Hate to break it to you. You know, Jesus' great commissioning was, hey, buddy, it's been good to hang with you guys. By the way, you're all going to die, but you're going to kick butt. High five. And he sent them all out, and they all died. Except for one. But, you know, I go to India 2-3 times a year. Thomas, the doubter, the one everyone thought was worthless, went the farthest of all the disciples. And he died on the shores of India, and by the year 2020, India will be the largest church in the history of the earth. You think he's got some inheritance? See, so I don't care what people have labeled you as, what your parents have said you are, what your friends have said you are. That matters none. Christ in you, the hope of glory. God, be gracious to us and bless us. Make your face shine upon us so that they can see you. Somebody has to manifest the kingdom of God. Somebody has to be outrageous enough to believe he can do anything. So I want to pray for this shameless audacity. I want to pray for your prayer lives. I want to pray even this week. I don't know, how long are you guys hanging out for? Friday. I want to pray this week that an environment of dreaming would be cultivated here. Not like Christian club, university campus. I hope we all feel better when we leave. Oh, you're so sweet and kind, brother. You know, the Texas thing. Oh, brother. But like grabbing each other's shoulders and going, what is the dream of God over your life? Rah! You know, like getting a little intense with it. Like getting a little like okay, what are we here for? What are we created for? What's our purpose? What is our dream? And like, actually, it doesn't take a lot of people to do a lot of stuff. I mean, it doesn't take, you know, God actually likes small groups. He's like, ah, it's too many people. Give me less. 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 He loves to use the few to do massive things. So I just want to pray for you. And then we're going to have a, are you guys going to do a song or no or ish or, I mean, a benediction? Don't we do those things here? Benedictions, ish. Oh man, I miss Texas. What a great place. Like 10 people smiled at me at the airport. Like, you don't get that where I live, man. It's like you show up at TSA in New York or DC or whatever, they're like, what are you doing here? You seriously are inconveniencing me by showing up. It's funny. Oh, God bless Texas. Okay, if that's you, like, I just want you to stand up. If any of that, what I said, resonated with you, I just want to pray over you that God would just arrest you. And, you know, I want to also just thank so many of those guys in the city, man, that just are plowing and pressing in. And you know, even my buddy up here that's going to lead us in a song, I mean, he has been singing over this city for 20 years. What if this is the season where everything that went up, it's time that it comes back down? What if we're the ones God wants to use?